On this episode of the Neil Wilkins podcast, I'm joined by Viva founder Juliet Galatly. Juliet, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
This is exciting. I have to say, I'm genuinely excited for somebody who has taken on Piers Morgan and won. I have to say, this is a real honour to have you on the show.
Oh, that's very kind. It'd be nice to be interviewed in a somewhat different style, though.
Yeah, I have to say, yeah, this is not going to be a Piers Morgan style event at all. And yeah, you're very much amongst friends here on the Neil Wilkins podcast, I have to say. But it's just, I mean, we'll go there just in a little while, because I think, you know, for a lot of people who have messages, they're doing marketing, they have products and services, they're trying to get their kind of inspiration and their passion to market, it kind of, you're going to be met with dissent, let's say, at the best of times. And I want to kind of explore kind of how you've dealt with that and cope with that in a little bit, because I think that's really going to resonate and help a lot of people understand kind of how to kind of accommodate that sort of, I guess, the antithesis of really where they're trying to go as brands or as business owners. So we'll go there. But I want to start with a big congratulations, because Viva is 30.
Yep.
How does that feel?
Old. No, because I founded Viva in my 20s. I worked for another organization, and prior to that, just for a media magazine, actually. And prior to that, my degree was zoology and psychology. But I'd been determined from such a young age to protect animals. Like, literally, my sort of strongest memory start on this topic from about age 11. And in my, you know, rose-tinted spectacles naivety, I thought, all I've got to do is tell people what's going on, and of course they'll change. Why wouldn't they change? But I was determined to do it. And you kind of have, in the UK, a choice in terms of which way you go with campaigning. It's either political lobbying, really, or consumer campaigning are the two, you know, the two big ones. And I decided that the most efficient and effective way to save animals was to persuade people that it was a good thing to be vegan. And for me, that meant very much consumer campaigning, about talking to individuals, obviously en masse, and seeing if we could really push the agenda and change the way people think about food and what they're eating and what the consequences of their choices are. And that's the route that I went down, and I'm really glad that I chose that. And I still, as just as passionately today, believe that that is the way forward.
Mm. It's kind of one of those words that is so evocative, isn't it? I mean, there's a lot of kind of softer versions of what you do, which is kind of plant-based, which feels like it's a little bit of an evolution for those who are kind of on the cusp of, is it a good thing, is it not a good thing? But the word vegan, it comes now so loaded. And I guess we can thank you for this in part, because it kind of comes so loaded now with a host of different kind of levels of baggage, doesn't it?
It's there's sort of different ways of looking at that. It's really, really interesting. And I suppose my first response would be, thank goodness it comes with something that people actually recognize it. Because you have to remember, when I started campaigning on these issues, people did not know what a vegan was. And it's hard to kind of remember that now, especially for the generation before me, my son's generation. It's just so taken for granted. And all that work's been done in a very short space of time, really, in terms of societal change, because food is so fundamental to a culture. It is a very difficult thing to shake up. And when I first started campaigning, it was on vegetarianism. I worked for the Vegetarian Society of the UK. And even back then, when I first started, even people didn't even know what vegetarian was. And it wasn't a societal norm, and it wasn't accepted. You were still seen as being odd. And so in the time I was there, the several years, it literally transformed. And then I set up Viva to be a vegan organization, but a campaigning vegan organization. I thought, OK, I've got to do this all again now. And it's harder with veganism, of course, because it's more commitment, and it's more of a shift away from so much what we've been taught is OK. In terms of it being loaded, well, it's interesting, this, because we just did a survey, and I mean literally just, we've only just started to publish the results, and it was 2,000 people of the UK, so, you know, not tiny. And we asked, for example, with meat eaters which term they preferred, if you like, or which they saw as the being the most positive or the most negative. And they were asked about vegan and plant-based, and plant-based irritated them a slightly more than the term vegan, actually. And I think we often make assumptions about what meat eaters think and feel, and we can get it wrong. And I'll give you one example of that. We did some billboard research. So we had about eight designs, from hard-hitting, very powerful, clear messages through to much softer messages. They're all on the animal side, by the way. And vegans who were like very close to Viva or within Viva were saying, no, you can't go with the hard-hitting messages too much. Meat eaters will just turn off. And then we did much bigger research with meat eaters, and the results were exactly the opposite. The only one that impacts on me and the one that I feel the most positive about and understand your message is the most hard-hitting one. And so I'm very, very wary, because of actual experience, of listening too much to within the vegan bubble of what something means or what something doesn't mean. Because I think if you get outside of our bubble and actually just talk to people who have got nothing to do with the vegan movement, you will find a whole array of opinions on veganism, from the absolute aspirational, think it's great, thank goodness for people who are pushing the agenda, we need people like you, through to the opposite, and literally everything in between. It's very hard to, I think you can almost say anything about it and be right, you know what I mean? But overall, one thing's for certain, veganism is much more well understood, and people definitely understand that it comes with many positive consequences of ending factory farming, and much more understanding today that not just factory farming, but farming animals per se is causing wildlife extinctions and is a major contributor to the climate crisis. There's definitely, I wouldn't say a deep understanding, but there's definitely an association now in people's minds. And then on the health side, a lot of aspirational qualities go with veganism in terms of people recognizing less heart disease, less of cancers and things like that. But the sort of the irony, the flip side of that coin, is that there's still that sort of nagging, well, why have we been told that we need to eat meat then? Why have we been told we need to eat dairy? Surely there's something missing. I don't know what's missing, but surely to God there's something, you know, otherwise why is everybody eating the damn stuff? You know what I mean? So we've still got work definitely to be done. But we've come such a long, 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 long way.
Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? I mean, when you kind of sort of think back, say, back to almost the beginning, you know, in those very, very early days, this kind of polarization, I mean, it must have been a really interesting thing to experience, almost like as a little social experiment that you were conducting, which was people who absolutely get it, the people who absolutely resist it, but this huge, great wave of people right in the middle who are kind of either on the fence or just oblivious to this thing. It's almost like it's polarized now, though, isn't it? Because you're either for it or you're against it. It doesn't feel like there's too many people kind of in that mid-ground. You know what it is, and you're either going to support it or you're not. Have you seen a transition over the years in that direction?
You see, I don't think that is the reality. I think the vast majority of the millions of people who are what you say, which is somewhere in the middle, actually do feel the way that you've just stated, which is it's like they're on, I describe it as a road of compassion, and you've got people at one end moving towards the other end. You know, nobody's, you know, perfect by any stretch of the imagination. But obviously through veganism, you're trying hard to minimize the suffering that you cause, aren't you? Most people do not want to cause suffering to animals. It's like ears prick up when you start talking to them. Oh yeah, I have heard about that that Hogwood documentary. Oh yeah, I did see Game Changers, and I am interested in moving along. But what about this? But what about that? It's much more open-minded than I think you're suggesting. And it does concern me, this sort of like the perception of polarization, even in itself, I think is a damaging thing. It's a negative thing, because one thing that has to drive a genuinely democratic society is the ability to talk to each other, no matter what position you take. Otherwise, how can you ever be educated? How can you ever truly understand other people? How can you ever influence other people if you immediately see them as the enemy? They're not the enemy. They're how you were a few years ago. you have to have understanding. You have to be able to see things 360 degrees. And if there's anything that I've learned in life, it's nuanced. It is not black and white, much as people like to say that it is, especially on social media. It is simply not, and human beings are not. And so I think the reality is quite different from what you're suggesting. And also the figures kind of back that up in terms of how people are changing. Because although veganism is the most popular it's ever been, that's absolutely for sure within the United Kingdom, there are millions of people who actually call themselves flexitarian or meat reducer, or I'm almost a vegetarian, whichever way they want to put it. They see themselves as moving along that line. Now, why do they even bother to say that and make those behavioural changes? And obviously the reasons for that are the many that you already know. But when we talk to meat eaters and when I do talks, I always try to make time to really talk to people at the end of my talk, sometimes at the beginning and the end. And the reasons are very varied. Through from the other day, I was doing a talk on dairy, actually. And if you did a largely vegan audience, everybody would say it was for animals, obviously. When you're talking to a largely mixed audience, it will be everything from antibiotic resistance through to pandemics, through to obviously the animals, through to high blood pressure, through to I'm doing it for the environment. You know, the reasons are much more mixed at that point, while people are sort of finding their way and deciding almost what to label themselves with, I guess. Yeah, it's much more nuanced and complicated than I think people perhaps realize in terms of human behavior. But the good thing about it is that whatever way you turn with veganism, because it touches on so many different aspects of our lives that are so real, therefore the benefits can be very, very real as well. And that is one of the reasons, through word of mouth, people are promoting veganism, because of their concerns for very massive, important issues.
Does it matter to you with the kind of the end game in sight? And I don't know what that might be. It'd be interesting to kind of explore that with you. You know, this ultimate kind of goal of your own sort of purpose, if you like, and obviously the purpose and mission of Viva. But does it matter kind of how we get there? If somebody who is kind of on the fence or flexitarian or however they want to describe themselves, if they're going at this from an animal welfare angle, but they get there, or they're going at this from a health and diet and healthy eating kind of perspective, but they get there, does it matter to you as founder of, you know, the most active, you know, vegan charity probably on the planet, does it matter how people get there as long as they do?
No, I don't think it does. And again, I think this sort of desire for perfection is, you know, you're climbing the wrong wall. What we need is for people to change. So you have to use whatever tools that you have. So if somebody's worried about their high blood pressure, you can educate them why vegans, you know, almost always, not always, obviously, but almost always have much healthier blood pressure rates. So why is that the case? And then you've got an in. And then obviously when somebody starts to open their mind about whatever reason that they've started to think about veganism or reducing animal products, that's when they're much more receptive to think about the issues that you're implying most people care about. Certainly for me, it was animals and always will be. But I have, you know, after I did my degree, I did 3-year nutritional therapy course. So I was treating people one-to-one through diet. And don't underestimate the change that you can get when you take care with somebody to get them healthy again. And the impact that can have, and the opening up of their minds, their hearts to the other issues. Yes, some people say, well, that's through a selfish route. I don't think self-care is actually selfish. I think it's sensible. And so I think we need to shift our attitudes a little bit. And, you know, and I don't think, because I've heard very odd things about people who come into veganism through the environment. I don't like judgmentalism at all. What is more important in a sense to us than the whole planet? Because it's the home for all of us. If you go, for example, vegan because you've heard that the main driver of wildlife extinctions is consuming farmed animals, then some people, you know, will make a judgment on that. But I don't really understand that or go along with that, because all animals matter. You know, gorillas matter as much as cows, as much as elephants, as much as mice, as much as pigs. You know, everything matters. All life matters, I would argue. And so whichever way you're coming at this, basically what tends to happen, as we all well know, is that most vegans will remain vegan, and the big motivator for them is when they find out what happens to animals inside those factory farms and inside those slaughterhouses. To open your mind to be able to look at that, you've often come to it through a different issue. But you end up in the same place, which is a more compassionate place. Mm. I don't care how people get to that place, just let's get them there.
Have you seen that kind of change over the years? I mean, 30 years is a lot of social change. And when we've had a number of, you know, economic cycles going through that time, we've had wars stop and start, we've had, you know, a whole variety of different changes. Have those kind of motivations, I'm not really thinking about motivations in you, because you are still clearly so driven towards, you know, the kind of the animal activism side of things. But have you noticed there have been sort of changes with, you know, the way that people kind of react to the offer, if we were to call it an offer, of taking these choices? Has that migrated too?
Yes, it definitely has. So Viva's always worked on a grassroots level, where we've done a lot of local outreach, because that's the way our campaigns have been structured. And yeah, 30 years ago, it was hard doing that kind of message. It's easy doing an animal welfare message, but as soon as you drill down into veganism, you know, people didn't understand it, and they saw it as being, inverted commas, extreme, and so forth. Today, it is just simply not seen in the same way. People are much more knowledgeable about it, much more aware how to be vegan, much more aware that the foods are available, and much more aware that, like I say, I don't mean a deep awareness of the issues, that would be false, but definitely aware of the connections, as I was saying before, that animal cruelty is really severe within the UK. Veganism is an answer, and I understand that, and I respect that, most people will say, definitely today. There's not the derision that there once was. Anything like, so I would argue that, in fact, like I say, this so-called normal Joanna blogs is much more positive and aspirational towards veganism than perhaps your previous question was suggesting. I think we've gone a long way.
Which is so encouraging, isn't it? But how do you deal with the vocal dissenter then? Because again, lots of people listening to this will think, wow, you know, Juliet's been, you know, forging this pathway through something that's so contentious, really, versus your average product or service. If you're a marketer, or you've got a business, or, you know, you maybe have a little local crusade of something you're trying to push. It isn't at this kind of level. I mean, this, for most people, is it quite an extreme kind of, you know, pioneering sort of, you know, venture that you've been on. So when somebody is a dissenter, it is actually, just by definition, going to be quite extreme back to you, isn't it? How do you kind of cope with that at a kind of a communication level? I want to hear about how you cope with it emotionally yourself in a minute, but how do you cope with this as an organization, or as the founder of an organization? It must be hard, because you know that what you're doing is right. It's wholesome, it's true, you've got the evidence to back it up, you just know it's the right thing to do, and yet you'll be sort of, you know, literally hit in the face by this this dissent. How do you deal with that?
Okay, so there's different types of dissent, as you put it, and I start with the media, if that's okay, as opposed to the individuals, the public, because the media is the most frustrating thing, not the public. And why do I say that? Because most media is predicated around being just clickbait. It's you know, it's that headline. It's superficial. It's very quick. So if they invite you on about an issue that could be, it could be huge. It could be like about literally our planet falling apart and how animal farming feeds into the climate crisis and wildlife extinctions. As I said before, it's actually the number one driver now of wildlife extinctions, and 1 million species are at risk. I mean, what a situation for the human race to have got ourselves into. And not just ourselves, clearly. And you'd think that there'd be media out there willing to actually explore this and look at why that is the case and how veganism can help. But more than that, take that leap, which it seems like a bloody leap with the, you know, British media. Let's explore how we do this together then. How do we influence change? How do we save this, you know, dying planet together? They, I think, are responsible for so much damage and so much negativity, not just on veganism, but on so many issues, because of their massive influence over people. And they have held back, you know, veganism, for example, by trying to label it as being extreme, when in fact all we're trying to do is actually do good and save the planet, save the animals within it, not be cruel, be kind, create delicious, better foods and everything that you know, and at the same time save the National Health Service millions of pounds in, you know, reducing chronic disease. You'd think everything was there to get support. It just shows the power of the meat, the dairy industries, when it doesn't have any logic behind it at all. It has emotion. Emotions are very powerful. And that is really frustrating, because you'll deal with people who you know are bright or intelligent, and they simply are refusing to help animals, help the world, and get to a better place. It's just like they want us to be sucked down into this, you know, dreadful abyss. And I find that really hard to understand. And I, you know, I'm sure you say to people, and I say to people, my God, have you got kids? Have you got grandchildren? Do you care at all about the future of this planet? Surely. I was doing the same arguments that you mentioned Piers Morgan a minute ago. I was doing the same arguments that I did with him, or on the Moral Maze. I was on the Moral Maze about a week or two ago. And I went on the Moral Maze about 20 years ago, and it was just striking how their questions had not moved on at all. And this is media again. Yes, of course, media has helped as well, because we'll get a place exclusive investigations and you're reaching millions of people in one massive hit. And of course you get that as well. But overall, I think, you know, I used to be really, I'm going to say it, really disgusted with papers like The Guardian, actually, because you'd think they should know better. And they were so anti-vegan for so very, very, very long. They just mocked it and mocked it and mocked it. Now they can't get away with it, which is a good sign, isn't it? Because there just simply would be too many complaints, and it wouldn't be, you know, the world has moved on. It wouldn't be worth their while going there. And they're finally actually getting it, that veganism is an important solution. Whether you agree with it or not, it's not something to be derided. And people like George Monbiot on The Guardian have obviously helped with that a lot. But my God, that has been a difficult journey. And that's a relatively left-wing newspaper. So yeah, as you can imagine what the right wing has been like with an organisation like Viva. It's been really, really hard, because there are very few, even if there was more reasoned media, it's really hard on broadcast to actually find those programmes who will explore something seriously. Most of them simply aren't about that. It's about a very quick interview, and so you're just getting your point of view across without really saying very much, you know, because there simply isn't the time. So that's been a big frustration, and still is. Now, the public is really interesting, because I learnt very early on that the most vociferous anti-vegan with the most anger are ironically the people who are most likely to change. And the ones that I, for want of a better term, fear are the people with the dead eyes, who have no expression and actually don't care. So I just give you one really quick story on that front, which is one of my sort of like very quick learning curves. I was helping out my parents back then. So I'm going back a long time. My parents back then had a pub and they'd gone on holiday and I was running it for them with my sister to help them out. And the neighbours, they had a 13-year-old daughter and I was chatting away to her about why I do what I do and talking about the animals, etc. The next day, her mum's comes in and she is so angry. And I'm talking like, you know, bright red face, totally coming into my personal space, sort of like here, shouting at me sort of inches from my face, which is not a normal reaction from somebody, I have to say, by the way. And she was so furious that I'd influenced her daughter. And she said, you can't influence how my daughter eats. I am her mother. I am her parent. I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. What's happened here? She goes, she's gone vegetarian. And like, okay, is that? And I did almost laugh, you know, because I thought something terrible had happened, you know. I said, but surely that's good. She goes, why? It's not your decision to make. I said, no, it wasn't my decision to make. Clearly, it's her decision to make. She has made that decision. All I did was talk to her about this and that and this and that. It wasn't the most terrible stuff I was talking to her about, you know. It wasn't slaughter. And I said, just hang on a minute. What is it that worries you about this? And I stayed very, very calm. I just wouldn't go with her anger and I wouldn't fight it back. That is the key thing with somebody who's got all that emotion is cooling it right down. Because somebody that's very angry kind of wants the other person to get angry so they can hit out and storm out. And when you're very cool with them and it's very hard for them to retain that anger. And then you're into having a proper conversation. So we're talking a bit about it, but she wasn't in the mood for talking. And I said, you know, look, if this is help that you need, basically about your daughter, I don't want my daughter to change. That's the point. I said, okay, but doesn't she have the right to make some choices? Don't you care about animals too? Because I knew that she did. She cared about elephants. She's mad about elephants. So I went in on that. Anyway, so she sort of goes out. A week later, she comes back and she had gone vegetarian herself with her daughter. I mean, isn't that a lesson in life to learn? Because I could have handled that very, very differently. And I'm not saying it's how I handled it that made her go vegetarian. I mean, you know, I'm not that, you know, arrogant by any stretch of the imagination. I'm just saying I could have been really upset by that, which goes back to your sort of like previous questions, like how do you cope as an organization? Because you do have to deal with so many different emotions in people handling things in different ways. And you do have to go through like a sort of personal training in terms of how to calm things down sometimes. But having said that, I don't want to give the wrong impression, because honestly, the vast majority of the public now are not, you know, they don't get really angry about this stuff. Most people do want to talk. And if they're pushing it away, if you can ask them in the right way why they're doing that, you can get to, you know, it's kind of obvious why somebody's pushing somebody. It's because it's uncomfortable, isn't it? And people don't want to feel upset. People almost do anything to stop themselves from feeling upset. So that can be the big barriers coming down, which is our major, major challenge. How do you bring those barriers back up so people will listen and be upset for a while and then find their way into a positive place?
It feels like you've done something quite profound, I would say. I mean, I'd be really interested in your take on this then, is that rather than just purely banging the drum for, you know, animal welfare, the activism and everything else that you've been doing, is actually what you've done is you've challenged the system, because systemically it's not, or it hasn't been on your side. And there's obviously, you know, a lot of other industries that would say the media has been biased away from their favor as well. But what you've done, by the sounds of things, is that you've created a more of a balance and an opportunity to have debate and to discuss so that people can then be more informed. So rather than saying you have to do this because it's right for the animals, it's right for planet, actually what you've done quite, again, profoundly, is to create that opportunity to have dialogue so that people can then find the reasons to buy into it and the reasons to take action rather than almost forcing them. Is that the best way, do you think, to kind of fight the system?
I think so, because you get to a point when, like I say with the media, that it got to the point where they couldn't take the mickey all the time because too many of their readers had already changed. And if they weren't fully vegan, they were vegan sympathetic, which is millions of people now. So you force their agenda to change. And hopefully the staff themselves on that newspaper start to change as well, because they start to understand the importance of it and at least respect, you know, the viewpoint, even if they've not moved the whole way. It's kind of getting people past that resistance where, you know, just because you believe in something, I am going to try and bash you over the head and belittle you because I've not done that myself. It's trying to move the debate beyond that and say, well, you may have not got there yourself, but respect the viewpoint because we need solutions now. And that's where I feel many members of the public are. I mean, when you look at the figures for flexitarians, which in the last big poll that was done, which is not that long ago, the start of this year, I think, you know, you're looking at such a massive percentage of the British adult population who, when you looked at what they meant by flexitarian, they actually meant almost vegetarian. So that's, you know, that's a big shift of people being what I label as vegan sympathetic. They're not there yet, but they're getting there. They get the arguments, because what you asked me, is the way forward to tell people what they must do. No, I think we all know that. I mean, we know that from being children ourselves, the way our parents talk to us. You know, if you're a clever parent, you don't go about it that way. You want the child to think that they've come to that decision themselves through their own thinking, because then they're much more likely to stick with it and believe in themselves. And it's the same. It's exactly the same as an adult. We don't like being told what to do. We really don't. And we don't like being judged either, any of us. And so it's about saying, here are the facts, you know, this is happening, but there are things that we can do about it. And the way that I try and encourage people to sort of put it across is a way of empowering people and saying, look, we've got so used to having to lobby government for any kind of change, and so many people have lost all faith in government and big institutions. This is a way that you can do something yourself without having to ask anybody else's permission, without having to lobby them. It's entirely your choice what you do every time you step in that shop, that supermarket, wherever you know, buy your food from. It's entirely your choice, nobody else's. And not saying anything that you won't have thought of, but with food, because it's so fundamental, it's not asking for somebody to, you know, oh, you know, buy a green marker today instead of a yellow one, just this one off, and that'll do everything. This is about people fundamentally changing forever. That's what we want, isn't it? And so to do that, you have to believe in yourself, in the reasons for veganism, because it is easier to eat meat because that's the way you've been brought up to do, and that's probably still what, you know, your colleagues and, you know, probably your friends are doing. So it has to be something that you understand and believe in and see as something. That's the other thing I really try and get across, is it's something to enjoy. It's not about deprivation. It's different and it's an adjustment. But when you're there, it's just so much nicer and so delicious. And there's so many options now. So, yeah, it's about opening people's eyes. It's about education. It's about making people, I suppose, or helping them believe in the fact that they can make a difference. You know, that power of one times a million does actually matter. And things are changing. And although it can seem very slow sometimes, the difference in, I suppose, the thing that people can tangibly see is just a few years ago, they went to a restaurant and there'd be no vegan option. It'd be vegetarian, maybe a vegetarian menu, maybe a token gesture to veganism. Today, you're getting whole menus in pretty much every restaurant chain. And that is a major, major, major shift in the, you know, the fact that people are demanding and buying that food, and that has been sustained all these years now. So people can tangibly see that there is a change in attitude and buying behaviour.
Would you always have been like this had you not had so much success? Because, you know, this is a huge success story. I mean, Viva's just gone from strength to strength. And I would say, certainly from my observations, it feels like it's accelerating. It's not just kind of on a steady trajectory. It just seems to be, you know, becoming at scale now. Do you feel kind of you would have been as resilient as you have been had it still been an upward battle?
I think it's still an upward battle. I wouldn't sort of like try and, you know, pretend. But I think in answer to your question, it's yes, of course, if you have a tangible successes, that's bound to encourage you. It encourages your supporters as well. And so there's that feedback going on and your support base becomes bigger because they can see you having success. So all of those different things drive each other. So yes, of course, it would be more difficult. But ultimately, the reasons don't change for why I'm fighting for veganism. You know, at my heart, it's the animals. From being a kid, you know, like I said, I just wanted to save animals and protect animals and didn't want to see the abject cruelty that they are, you know, that they endure. We're better than that. I really think as a species, we are better than that. And I still fundamentally believe that most people in Britain do not want to see, let's go back to the Hogwarts and the Flathouse pig farms of this world, the way those pigs are treated, like dying in front of me when I stepped inside those mega pig farms supplying the major supermarkets who all know what's going on. And the way those pigs, you know, are gassed to death and the horror that they go through, that drive to need to change things is just within me. I think that's just something I was born with. That was my mum's theory anyway. She was just saying it's there from being little. So I don't think that would change. But of course, it would be upsetting if you couldn't see anybody else changing with you and that nobody could understand it. You'd be on a, you know, it literally would be a very lonely planet, wouldn't it? But fortunately, you know, there are people all over the world now, and I have connections with other organisations, you know, literally all over the planet now. People understand and they believe and it's changing.
So if you have the Juliet's crystal ball and you're looking into the crystal ball for, say, well, let's not look too far ahead, certainly not the next 30 years. Let's look, say, 5 years out, because I think there is this kind of tangible kind of groundswell in the right direction. Where do you see us, say, within 5 years, particularly in the UK? What do you think it's going to look like?
I think the UK has got massive potential, leading potential for the whole of the vegan movement globally. And I think that there's a chance that marketers and industry are going to wake up to that and also see the UK as a sort of a leading force and will be less reticent to actually talk about the issues, because industry, you know, they shy away from talking about the issues. Maybe they'll touch on the environmental issues related to food, but very few CEOs are brave enough to really speak the truth. And I think we're going to see that change where people become a lot bolder, a lot braver, and start to say, actually, we really need now for example, the restaurant trade to go majority vegan in terms of their choices. The planet actually has to have restaurants do that to completely normalize veganism. So that for meat eaters, when they go out to eat out, it'll be nothing choosing a vegan food. There won't be a big debate about it or is this vegan? You know, it'll just become part and parcel of your life, because we have to have that to prevent the climate crisis getting worse, and we have to have that to prevent the wildlife extinctions and many other environmental issues as well. I think people will get bigger and bolder and braver in terms of taking on the meat industry as well, which is extremely powerful. Ironically, I think there'll be going to be sectors and lots of arguments within the dairy and the meat sectors themselves about how they handle this and how they move forward. And I think you're going to see parts of that break off and actually for them themselves to take advantage of the move towards veganism and actually decide that is the way forward for the planet and that is the future. And you're going to get others who are just, you know, dig their heels in and will fight like hell and will become nastier in terms of their marketing. So that's a whole other debate I could do with you in terms of how the meat industry markets itself, but that's interesting. And I think that the food industry, in terms of, you know, those those that make money out of selling vegan foods need to get their act together more and actually do a massive, more clever, whether it's using humor, whatever, but a much bigger fight back against those who are trying to trash vegan food, and actually be much bolder and with their you know, with their argument, if you like, in terms of what they're saying to the public. The thing is, the reality is, as we all well know, all the world's biggest and most pressing issues are not going to go away. I mean, we've touched on the environment very, very briefly. We know that animals are going through absolute hell, and we're supposed to be a civilized society, and there is no excuse for what we do, none. We know that processed meat is a group one carcinogen. Red meat is classed as a group two carcinogen. We know it causes many of the chronic diseases that the NHS is crippled by. Then we have issues, like I said, antibiotic resistance, which are just going to get ever more important, sadly, and the next pandemic, which is being talked about very seriously by scientists. And many of them fear that it's going to be bird flu, which is being propagated by the way that we intensively farm broiler chickens and other animals, because you can get a mix of the viruses mutating, et cetera, et cetera. But factory farming is extremely bad and dangerous news in terms of global pandemics. And so our knowledge is just going to become stronger and stronger and stronger, as it has already, just as you look at the science that's come out in the past 5 years. And the fact that scientists themselves are only just, you have to remember, scientists have been so reticent to speak out because they haven't felt like it was their job, or they felt like they would be under fire from the institutions that they work for. So universities themselves have to become, I know I keep using these words, but they do have to become braver and bolder. And I think that is what we're going to start to see, that the truth is the truth is the truth is the truth. You know, whether or not they're going to say you must go vegan, this is the answer, or push people on that road and say, don't be frightened of talking about veganism. It's a massive solution. Any way that you can head in that direction is a positive step. I think the latter is what is the message that they're going to be doing. You know, from a scientific base, universities and institutions are going to have to start saying it. All the health and dietetic organizations are going to have to become stronger. The food industry itself, we keep being promised cultured meat on them. You know, on a commercial level, it's not happened yet, not really, barely. You know, that could be transformative in terms of, it gives meat eaters no excuse, really. What on earth would you want to trash the planet for and destroy an animal's life for, when you've got the exact replica there in front of you? So when that's normalized, that's going to be transformative too. And still at the same time, you're going to have people driving forward the whole reasoning for veganism, so you're just going to get more and more and more vegans. You know, vegans, there's nobody who can spread veganism more than a vegan, and the figures are just going up and up and up and up, and through 2023 you're the biggest jump ever. So that, you know, it's just going to keep continuing, because the reasons for changing are not going to go away. As I said, they're going to become more pressing.
It's wonderful to hear such a groundswell of positivity. I mean, whichever way you look at this, this is kind of going in the right direction, however you want to play it, however you define it. How can we get people joining up, joining the movement, taking those first steps on the next 30 years with Viva?
I mean, the best place to look at Viva is the website. You know, it's all totally revamped, totally up to date, and got everything from the actual issues that we've touched upon through to a big section on how to change. So one of the things the public find the most useful, and which we've developed and are continuing to develop, is we just call it vegan swaps. So what they're asking basically is, I had a chicken sandwich for lunch, what can I just replace it with? You know, I'm having ham tonight with da 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 da, what can I replace it with? I'm having a Sunday roast, what can I replace? There's very, very, at the beginning, that mindset that I just want to swap something out, which I totally get. It's about, you know, being comfortable, isn't it? Not again, upsetting yourself and what you're used to. And that, of course, there are all those vegan swaps. So they're all on the website. And we do a leaflet, which we give out on our stalls, which is the vegan swaps. It's all there. And it goes through all the different food groups, through from the different red meats through to all the different dairy products, from cheese to chocolate, anything you can think of, we've got it there. Just go on the lifestyle section of our website. It's viva.org.uk, I should say. I think ultimately, you know, that desire to want to even try the swaps comes from within yourself. And to do that, sorry, I'm just going to have a sip of my tea. To do that, it's about educating yourself. It's about being real about where the planet is heading. And so just look at whichever interests you most. There's an animal section, a planet section, and a health section. One of the biggest myths that still abounds is that this thing that meat is somehow natural to us, and therefore somehow we're carnivorous or omnivorous species. Yeah, you know, we have this built-in desire to kill other animals. I would say it's simply not true. Go back to my degree of zoology. I love looking at physiology, and I could do a whole podcast just on this. Don't worry, I'm not going to. Just go to the health section of the Viva website and look up evolution and physiology and just read it and absorb it and start to take a big step back and try and look at things objectively. That's what I'd encourage people to do. Because when you're objective and get rid of your own subjectivity, you know, you want to believe something because I actually like the taste of da-da-da-da-da that I've been eating. But just for a minute, be really objective and scientific about it and open your mind. And the other thing is, obviously, we'd love people to jump to being vegan overnight, but you do it at your own pace, in your own style, in your own way. Label yourself whatever you want to label yourself, or don't label yourself at all. Really, it doesn't matter. What matters is just make the change. And even choosing vegan dishes when you go out to eat, you know, that dish, you half your impact on the climate crisis by choosing a vegan dish over your typical meat dish. Every little action you take has an impact, and it's not just you. It's millions and millions of people changing now. So it's something to definitely be involved with. It's something you can empower yourself with. You know, you can make your own decisions, and enjoy it. That's what I'd say. Enjoy your journey. Find new adventures. Mm. And yeah, my latest tip, I'm going to promote completely another company outside of Viva, is Grubby, actually, the vegan home recipe kits. If you can afford that, for somebody who's making that transition, just makes it so easy, because all the recipes are 30 minutes they're pretty much all around 30 minutes, and they're just so damn tasty. And it suddenly all becomes like, oh, what was I worried about? And the other big thing I'd say, my other tip practically, is the cookbook Everyone Can Cook Vegan, which is new, and it's by Viva, so it's in the Viva shop, and that is specifically aimed at people who don't want loads of fuss. Most of us don't these days, do we? And who want quick recipes, but I've got that imaginative twist. And again, it just takes away the barriers and the fear that you have about change, because we all have that, you know. And like I say, rather than see it as something negative, see it as a huge positive in your life and just enjoy it.
Julia, this has been, you know, such a pleasure sharing the passion and, you know, the drive that you still have 30 years later. It just feels like you're getting started. I mean, it's infectious, your passion for this, which is great. But I loved as well those kind of very, very simple little tools and tips that you've shared, because it is not complicated. Once you stop and you actually wake up and think, this is not difficult stuff to do, but it is kind of getting over that first little hurdle. So we'll share all of the links that you've mentioned there in the notes describing this particular episode. So Juliet, thank you again for your time today. It's just been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on.